Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Gilcrease Museum is opening a new exhibit featuring contemporary art created in our own community. Recall Respond features the work of 13 artists from the Tulsa Artists Fellowship across a wide range of artistic disciplines. This juried exhibition asks the TAF artists to interact with the wide collections of the Gilcrease, which of course encompasses artwork, ethnographic and archaeological objects, historical documents and objects, and then respond with new works of art. Those works range from painting, sculpture, and photography, to performance and video art, to spoken word and outdoor visual and aural installations. The show opens today and runs through October 13th, featuring the work of 13 Tulsa Artist Fellows, and another exhibition will take place next spring featuring other artists. My guests today are Laura Fry, the Chief Curator of Gilcrease Museum, and Carolyn Sickles, the Executive Director of the Tulsa Artists Fellowship, to discuss this collaboration and the new exhibit, Recall, Respond. Carolyn and Laura, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. Yeah, thanks for having us.
So how did this collaboration where Tulsa Artists Fellowship artists interact with the Gilcrease collection and then create new work, how did this get started?
Well, at Gilcrease Museum, I've been observing over the last couple years how many of the Tulsa Artist Fellows are responding to this place. It's been really interesting to see how artists from all across the country and even some from here in Oklahoma are coming to Tulsa, learning more about the local history, local culture, and many of them have been creating a variety of responses to Oklahoma. And given that the Gilcrease Museum is centered around American history, culture, art, but certainly with a number of collections related to this place, I thought there could be some interesting synergy by looking at these contemporary responses to American history, to Oklahoma's history and culture.
And what was the interest from the Artist Fellowship? I know you're wanting to put their work out there, but oftentimes many of these artists already have their own thematic work underway, and you're asking them, okay, go interact with this museum and then create new work.
Well, one of the things that the fellowship is experiencing just with growth is that from our first year, which was 12 fellows, and now we currently in our fourth year have 60, we are seeking a variety of platforms for the fellows to share work, completed works here in Oklahoma. A lot of our fellows are making work that's going to be presented all across the country and the world. So we've been thinking quite a bit about how the work that is created here is presented here, and to do that in kind of this format of doing a deep dive into what Oklahoma history looks like. And I mean, Gilcrease was the perfect partner to kind of embark on this series.
So how did this exhibit take shape? How did were there ground rules set up, or kind of go through the game plan for this?
Well, it started with Carolyn and I meeting, I mean, I think almost a year ago, to really start laying the concept for the exhibition. And we decided to do a juried exhibition for this presentation. So we wrote a call for proposals that outlined what we were looking for the exhibition. And it was open to either existing artworks or new artworks being created, to either visual works or performance works. And we invited fellows, again, to respond to the history and art contained within the Gilcrease collections, or to Oklahoma's history and culture. And so it took a lot of kind of and figuring out the parameters of a partnership and a collaboration. But after going back and forth for a few months, I think we announced the call for proposals early this year.
Yeah, when the fellowship year started. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think was so exciting about this was that we didn't have to fit everyone's responses into one project. We were able to look at two different opportunities for works to be in conversation. So each of these shows that we're going to be doing that do have public programming and educational programming and performances tied in with them, and writing-based work and work with on the grounds on the property, which will be something we can talk about, but that each one of those pairings has its own kind of special conversation happening within it.
So it has its own thematic elements.
Yes.
So this exhibit will look very different than the second one in the spring of next year.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. The exhibit's going to have two parts. So we have the first installation opening June 21st and the second installation with a new round of artworks opening on November 15th.
So one thing I noticed was that some of the pieces that the artists were interacting with weren't necessarily something that you would see on display in a normal way at Gilcrease. Did you give them free roam of seeing the collection, what's on display as well as what's in storage?
Yes, one of the early stages of this project was hosting a tour of the Gilcrease collections for the Artists Fellowship, and we invited the entire fellowship and staff and really focused that tour on our collection storage since they could come back on their own time to see the public galleries. So we were aiming to really give the fellows a sense for the variety in the Gilcrease collection, and the sort of the range of cultures represented in the Gilcrease collection so that they could, you know, maybe see something they weren't familiar with prior that they could respond to. And I think we had some really interesting responses to all areas of the Gilcrease collection through this project.
Well, that's the one thing I noticed was that you're seeing work that encompasses the wide range of collections that Gilcrease has, everything from beadwork to photographs to artworks to and lots of different subject matter as well.
I think, kind of speaking through the artist lens, this type of access to a museum collection that is so vast and diverse is very rare. Artists, not all institutions, will open their collection up to research. And we knew that this was going to be a very productive experience for our fellows. And also, I think, something that will hopefully create agency to approach more institutions and access their archives. So that's one of the things that I think has been so exciting for all of us are the discoveries that have been made across the way. And giving the Gilcrease audience and the Tulsa Artist Fellowship audience an opportunity to see works in conversation that they might not necessarily have, you know, been able to see on view together.
What were the expectations and perceptions going in? First of all, from maybe you and your jurors as they were expecting to see work, were they met? Were they surprised? What exactly?
One of the things that was exciting in the jury process was that our fellows were often coming to us with multiple ideas, and we got to see the different ways that they were approaching artworks within the collection and the grounds and the land and Oklahoma history. So our work was cut out for us in being able to parse apart what works needed to be within the conversation of these exhibitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I've become familiar with some of the artists' work, especially the fellows who've been showing here locally, which many of them have. But even with that, I really wasn't sure what we were going to get from the proposal process. And that was really exciting. And we ended up getting a really wide variety of proposals and media, from video installations to plays that would be performed or outdoor textile pieces. There's a proposal for a period room that will be part of the second installation. So this really incredible range of media and approaches, and that was really exciting to see. And yeah, and as Carolyn mentioned, we had a chance in some cases to choose between multiple proposals from one artist and really see what would be the best fit with a group exhibition.
Now, let's tackle that question from a different set of expectations and perceptions. One, a typical viewer that comes to the museum is used to seeing a certain type of art, a lot of Western art created in the late 19th century, early 20th century, American art from the 19th century. They don't expect to see art that was created last week. And from the artist's point of view, I think there's also a perception that a lot of the collection is speaking to a different age. So how were those perceptions altered by what's shown up and by the artists interacting?
I mean, actually, Laura and I were just talking about the fact that when we're thinking about audience, how we are kind of prompting our audience to think about the work and what their responses are. There are even wall labels that we're still wondering if they need additional context, because we want to make sure that there is an accessibility in people entering contemporary artworks. We want to make sure that our audience is prepared to encounter different gender identities. We want them to be able to feel very comfortable with these works in the context of what's going on in our lives today here in Oklahoma. We're not looking at work that's reflecting on necessarily 30, 40, 50 years ago, but we're talking about things that we're hearing about on the news. So it's been kind of exciting to, I think, challenge the audiences of Gilcrease to really feel open to this, the newness of this work. And I think it's going to prompt a lot of conversation.
I'm really excited to see how our audiences react and what questions we get. And I think as we've slowly started introducing more contemporary artwork at Gilcrease over the last couple years, which in many ways is reflecting some of what our founder did back in the 1940s and 1950s, but I think looking at contemporary artists today has been exciting in a way to really bridge between the past and the present. So we're showing that the historic artworks in our collection are dealing with issues that we're still grappling with today, and that even artists today are still exploring and in new directions that are really exciting. But I'm hoping that our visitors, maybe who are less familiar with contemporary art, can come away with a new perspective of how this work can shed some new light on these ideas, perhaps through a perspective or angle they hadn't considered before.
My guests today are Laura Fry, she's a senior curator at Gilcrease Museum, and Carolyn Sickles, the executive director of the Tulsa Artist Fellowship. The two organizations are collaborating on the first of two exhibitions that opens at the museum today, titled Recall Respond. It'll be on display now through October 13th, and they're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the work in the exhibit. As I came in early in the installation process, but my eye was first caught as I'm still one level up in the museum looking down at the exhibit area at a piece that is utterly of this century yet absolutely connected to the collection. That is a large, very vibrant painting by Yadaka Fields using rattles and fans. And but again, I can see how this absolutely connects to the Gilcrease collection, but it's expressed in very much a contemporary palette.
Yeah, the work by Yadaka is just really vibrant. It's an oil painting, and he created a hand-carved frame to go around it. But he was inspired by some of the objects in the Gilcrease collection that are connected to Native American church rituals, rattles and fans, some of the drumsticks. And many of these objects were created through the 20th century. And the objects themselves have really vibrant colors, even neon, rainbow tones. And Yadaka took some of that palette and that are in these details of these really intricate objects and blew it up to a painting that's 72 inches wide and really amplified that sense of color and motion and energy that these objects contain, and really bringing a sense of life to these objects and in a way that I think when you just see a rattle in a case at a museum, you don't quite get that context and some of the energy behind it. And so his painting really provides a new way of seeing some of these items that really brings them to life.
No, I think the energy of the piece is what's really amazing. And the other thing that strikes you as you first see the exhibit is the range of artists that are a part of the fellowship. I mean, there's poetry on the walls, there's video, and I guess through the course of the exhibit, there will be live performance pieces. This exhibit actually blows out the walls of the museum. You have things on the grounds.
Yes, there's two outdoor works. We have an outdoor sound installation by Jessica Harvey that is a commentary on Oklahoma's oil industry. It's a recording of an Oklahoma pump jack that is where the speed is slowed down, so it produces more of a rumbling growl. And it's she's really with this piece trying to ask this question about how oil and oil products are really part of all of our lives and how it permeates our economy in ways that perhaps we don't think about every day. And also on the grounds, we have a lovely textile piece by Rachel Hayes that's displayed outside up in the trees, surrounded by greenery, with this really vivid neon colors of fabric. And you can see it perfectly framed from the Gilcrease restaurant. So if you come out for brunch, you get a great view. But it's really saying, you know, what does landscape art mean today? Is today's landscape art the same as what Thomas Moran was doing 150 years ago? Or are there new ways to consider the landscape and perhaps even installing works within the landscape as a way of creating artwork about the landscape?
Now, Carolyn, I mentioned the poetry that's on the walls by Steve Bellinoka, who uses photographs from the collection as a really interesting way to create poetry about Geronimo in this case.
Yeah, so, you know, Steve is a newcomer to the Tulsa area. He came here for the fellowship program, someone who has been very interested in American history and has been creating a lot of response work that kind of intervenes in the conversations that we're often missing within our history. Steve has a fascinating story about leaving our country and returning that I think very much resonates through the work that's within the show. We are also really looking forward to Steve being able to perform his poetry live within the space and engage in conversation. I think that's actually a great jumping off point for text within the show in general, is we also have created a participatory area for our audience goers to be able to create their own responses and share with us what resonates within them for the work. I think in the spirit of the way that Steve has been creating poetry, we really would like to challenge our viewers to look at the collection, look at the artworks, and tell us what they think.
I was just going to say, a lot of times when you see that participatory element, it's sort of like, tell us what you think of the exhibit. And, it, you know, you get everything from it's awesome to I don't know about it. And it's just sort of thrown away comments. Are you asking for something more substantive from viewers?
Well, we're thinking of including a variety of prompts. We'll have a board where people can leave a comment on a board behind, and so we might experiment with a variety of prompts throughout the run of the exhibition and see what responses we get. And so we're playing on that idea that's contained in the title of recalling and responding, and inviting our visitors to respond as well.
I was just going to say, you know, in the format of the response, I think it would be very interesting to see creative responses, people creating artworks like Steve has around the work within the show, to see the way that text can become artistic feedback for us.
We will also have a couple of performances, and one of those is by Clem Hurd, and he'll be performing a poem that's really about his reactions to moving to Tulsa and learning more about the history of Greenwood and the what role that history plays in Tulsa today. Are we remembering this history? Are we trying to pave it over or to economically develop around it to the point where the history is this memory is lost? So he's planning to do a performance with his poem combined with images taken from the Gilcrease collection, I believe, from maybe some other sources in Tulsa as well. So we're looking forward to scheduling that later this summer.
Yeah. Now, one of the pieces in the exhibit is, again, it's not the media you would expect to see in an art museum, and that is Carl Jones's puppet bags. Are we going to have a puppet show?
Yes.
Yes. That is a yes, a yes. Unanimous yes. We would hope there's going to be
so
more
let's explain the puppet heads.
Sure.
Well, when you come into the gallery, one of the works you'll see is a case with a set of paper bag puppets that are made from construction paper and Elmer's glue and those brown paper lunch bags that you might have used in elementary
school.
Which
we all did in third grade, right?
Absolutely.
And to see them behind a vitrine is very special.
Yes. So Carl is does a variety. He's primarily a performance artist and performer, and he has been creating these puppet portraits of various figures for as part of his practice. And for this exhibition, he proposed doing a performance with puppets related to Oklahoma's history. And we said, well, these puppets are so much fun. Could we include some of them in the exhibition? And he said that would be great. And so he created a series of puppets that are all artists in the Gilcrease collection. And they're really funny. I think in museums, we have a tendency to really venerate some of these historic artists, you know, like George O'Keefe. You put her on the paintings on a wall and you make the lighting perfect and you stand back from it and you're supposed to be so contemplative and serious. And then to see her rendered as a puppet with children's art supplies is it really you know, takes away some of that mystique. It makes these figures much more humble and relatable. It takes them off of a pedestal and places them in this everyday context. And I think that's really the goal of Carl's work, is to engage with some of this history and some of these influential characters in a way that's very relatable and humorous and really humanizes some of these figures.
I wanted to add that one of the things that's so important about this in Carl's practice is that there is an educational piece. Carl wants to make puppets with audience members and tell stories. And I mean that, and on like the most kind of like primary level. And so this is something that young people can get a lot out of, but also adults really get to like re-engage with part of themselves that you often don't flex every day. You don't normally get to pull out your small scissors and your Elmer's glue, if you even have any in your home, unless you have young people. And I think Carl brings a sense of wonder to the show that is very critical. And we really look forward to, you know, how we see the puppets become activated within the exhibition.
Yeah.
What I really found interesting was the way you're seeing genres blur in some of the pieces. Molly Murphy Adams' work is one I really enjoyed. She creates these prints based on the beadwork and bandolier bags from the collection, but also these photographs with beadwork attached. Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. Very much in a way like the walking stick exhibition, where she paints these images on top of these landscapes. This is actual beadwork done in some of the same patterns over the photographs. So I just thought it was really wonderful.
Yeah, about 2 years ago, we had an exhibition of paintings by Kay Walking Stick at Gilcrease. And some of her most recent work is, like you said, is pairing patterns that are taken from Native American artworks over top of landscape, of these landscapes, as a way of putting an indigenous presence back into the American landscape. And I think Molly Murphy Adams' photographs and beadwork are creating a similar relationship and response, but she's taking photographs of the landscape, these really beautiful images, and then doing these delicate beadwork patterns directly over top of the photographs into the paper. And the beadwork patterns were all inspired by objects from the Gilcrease collection, some of the patterns you see in our historic objects. And again, it's a way of reasserting an indigenous presence and not just imagining the landscape as this untouched place.
Joel Daniel Phillips has a work in the exhibit, amazing pencil artist and graphite artist. Two pieces, Cover Your Prairie and Speckled Cattle, and This Land Is Not Your Land, which is based on one of the iconic 1893 land run photos of, and he's created his own reality out of that. It's really interesting work.
You know, Joel's work is doing these really meticulous, labor-intensive graphite and charcoal drawings based on historic photographs. And in this, these are two images from a series where he was really looking at the American West and the impact of manifest destiny. And he's subverting and questioning the original triumphant intent of these photographers. And so while he's creating these images, the titles are the opposite of what you might expect, or the opposite of the original intent. And so with this sort of meditative process and encouraging us to look more deeply at these images, he's encouraging us to also question this history and our assumptions about these histories.
Cover Your Prairies and Speckled Cattle, I guess, is a quote, but actually the drawing is of buffalo.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's based on a quote that was attributed to General Philip Sheridan, where he was encouraging the extermination of the American bison in the 19th century so that the plains could be then covered in cattle. So it's, I think, again, something that we look back on and we're not too proud of today.
Yeah. Some of the other artists using photography, Dan Farnham, for example, The Bones of Greenwood. Rena Dietrich has these images of buffalo wallows, one relatively recent, another years ago, and another one that's you can just barely see the remnants of.
Yeah, Raina said she was inspired by this triptych that we had on display at Gilcrease Museum last fall by William Jacob Hays. And Hays was traveling through the American West in the 1860s when bison were still numbering in the millions, but he could already see that perhaps there were some warning signs and these numbers were already being threatened. So he created a series of paintings showing showing the destruction of the bison is written really warning about this coming destruction, which indeed came to pass. Raina was inspired by that idea of a triptych and that gradual disappearance, and her image is very subtle. It's three photographs of the Kansas prairie showing a buffalo wallow after a rainstorm, which is a depression created when a bison's rolling in the dirt. And so it's a little, just sort of a mini pond in the landscape. There's a buffalo wallow in the middle of a drought where it's really just a patch of dirt. And then an ancient buffalo wallow where the only way you can see it is that the grass is a different color in that spot. So it's this idea of this sort of gradual disappearance, but also referencing these animals without directly showing the bison themselves, showing really their impact on the land.
Now, we talked about some of the special programming, but I know there's going to be some other special programming at the end of August. Can you talk a little bit about that, Carol?
Sure. So our August program is going to be featuring some of the performances that we've been organizing with our artists. They are going to be made for this event. So we're going to be looking at new work, which is really important to the fellowship, that our fellows are using their time to generate new artworks. That's what they're doing when they're in residence with us all year. We are also working in collaboration with the Gilcrease's education team to have hands-on activities throughout the evening for all ages. And we're really looking forward to kind of celebrating the Gilcrease grounds. We want to have, there will be participatory work happening outside as well. So we hope people wander and that we have a mild late summer evening here in Oklahoma. But yeah, we're really looking forward to inviting everyone here in this community to engage with something different. I know the relationships with Gilcrease are long and meandering, and for many Tulsans have started at childhood. And this is your opportunity to see the Gilcrease collection in a new way, and also get to meet some of your creative community members who are here in Tulsa working very hard to get us all thinking about, you know, our landscape and our lives.
And certainly that is a goal. That's one of your goals as the executive director, I would assume.
Very much so. I mean, the fellowship very much is focused on the in process. People can come down on a first Friday in the Tulsa Arts District and get to see what artworks are being made by artists. But I think it means something very special to get to see finished works on view within conversation of our city. And that's what is so much a part of the mission of the George Kaiser Family Foundation, who we are an initiative of. And we really look forward to seeing how these relationships with our cultural community can grow, and how we all can continue to benefit from having these contemporary makers amongst us.
All right. Well, Recall Respond opens today at Gilcrease. Carolyn and Laura, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you
so much. Rich.
Laura Fry is the senior curator at Gilcrease Museum, and Carolyn Sickles is the executive director of the Tulsa Artist Fellowship. The two organizations are collaborating on two exhibitions, the first of which opens today, Recall Respond. It's on display at Gilcrease Museum through October 13th, featuring the work of 13 of the Tulsa Artist Fellows. For more information, visit gilcrease.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.